Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The inner game is the relationship we have to our authentic purpose and contribution in life. It's about the ways that we grow personally and spiritually on the inside that affects everything on the outside of our lives. The quality of our inner game exerts a creative impact because our quantum world shifts to reflect our thoughts and feelings. Each of our contributions shapes the quality of what is possible for us all on the planet. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people take on their spiritual and personal growth, and how that strengthens their organizations and offerings to make a bigger difference. Today's guest is Laura Bartels, Executive Director of the Mindful Life Program, which teaches mindfulness through a growing number of offerings. She is also a natural building specialist who lives in the straw bale house that she built herself. Laura is an old friend. I had the pleasure of living across the street from her when she was building her house. Thank you so much for being here today, Laura.
What a great pleasure it is to have this opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think it's probably interesting for people to hear how you made that jump from straw bale builder with your tool belt on so many days that I observed, and all the amazing contributions you made in that with that hat on in your life, and then fortuitously met an ex-monk and fell in love. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Mm. Yeah, so the elevator version is I just made a little change from outer sustainability to inner sustainability. And I think that is a synopsis of the process that I was seeing that was needed. So in 20 years of working in sustainable building and climate change, I was working around the country and working with some very high-level efforts in changing everything from methods and techniques to building codes. I found that it was a huge effort, and it's a big game. It's demanding. And what I saw with colleagues around the country, and I saw it in myself as well, was that real need for inner resilience. As we progressed year after year, there would be challenges. There would be disappointments. There would be news of opposite efforts that were succeeding. And, you know, as we know, those things can wear on us. And in order to be effective, we have to have some inner skills, some inner resilience, some qualities that we develop that provide us the opportunity to continue to be clear about our efforts, to stay balanced and strong. And so I was seeing that, and I had a personal practice over many years, and I recognized that that just might be the next evolution for me, is to not work so much on the technical side, but more on that inner human side. And then, yes, I did meet John Bruna, and we did fall in love, and he moved to Carbondale, and I was still continuing to work. And slowly, I saw this opportunity unfold and clarity come around this possibility to make that shift to inner sustainability. And 6 years ago, we founded the Mindful Life Program with our co-founder, Mark Maloney, in Melbourne, Australia.
And doing wonderful things with that. I wonder, I mean, this has been such a big year of it feels like an uptick in awareness around the global, the climate predicament that we're in. And I wonder if you've seen that in the people that you interact with.
Yeah, I not only seen it, heard it, and experienced it myself. I mean, it's not lost on me that, you know, the latest IPCC reports, the continued increase in storm events, some severe weather events, that is clear. And I think in talking with people directly, what I hear is people beginning to realize more and more and be able to verbalize the impact it's having on them. So that inner impact, the eco-anxiety, climate grief, those kinds of things, being able to be recognized and realize that it's something we, you know, that's really needed to be dealt with.
Yeah. What do you feel like are some of the impacts of not taking that on?
There is a pretty clear realization that the science is there. It's the behavioral change that is so needed. And I think when we don't deal with the impact on our psyche, on our emotions, on our well-being, our lasting, well, ongoing well-being, we become less able to accept the realities and then address the realities in effective ways.
I've been working with grief for such a long time and understanding the restoration of wholeness that happens when you're able to really grapple with and process grief in healthy ways. And it feels like the, you know, the possibilities of that, as a culture, imagining our relationship to grief, you know, that there's so much possibility in that. What are you seeing and feeling around that?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think, and we, you know, we work a lot with in mindfulness practice is cultivating attentional balance. Because without some control over our attention, without being aware of where my attention goes, what my attentional habits are, as well as what I fill my attention budget with, I am often unaware that I'm filling it with all the negative or most pessimistic side of things. And not also including what's good, what's really possible, and having a balanced sense without being Pollyanna in any way, without ignoring facts, but with being able to accept realities, but the full picture of reality, so that I am attending to those things that support me as well as those things I need to address. So that fuller picture.
And in terms of grief, it feels like it's important to get up close to those things that are sources of sorrow. How does that, it feels like a subtle, you know, like to stay aware of, am I heading down that path of too much attention on this? Because it's our cultural norm to not allow ourselves to really go into grief. There's not a lot of space for it. There's, you know, we don't get a lot of support to do that. How do you kind of navigate that those subtleties?
Well, I think one thing is that we know that being together, being with others, having human connection, not digital connection, is so important for that. I think another thing is that we tend to give a lot of weight and a lot of focus to our emotional state in a moment. And when we look at sort of what balances us, having attentional balance and having what's called conative balance or values-based, a balance in our values, that I'm actually showing up more and more in alignment with my values, that tends to give me some strength to deal with some of the more emotional ups and downs. I have also, and you know, what we also teach about is to remember that emotions are a temporary up and down state, and not that grief is, but the pieces of that, the particular emotions we're having, do come and go, and we tend to glom onto one. I am angry. Well, are you angry, or are you experiencing a sense of anger right now that will come and go and you'll still be here? And so I think the balancing and some bringing some wisdom to that realm can be really helpful.
Beautiful. Well, just wanted to take a quick break to say this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Laura Bartels, and we are talking about inner sustainability. And I love that open-heartedness is part of what you teach about. And how do you help people cultivate that? I know in so many of our professional settings, we don't talk about heart a lot. You know, you might talk about courage or something in terms of leadership, but not really that, probably the open-heartedness that you're talking about.
Yeah, so the key is, first, I think, realizing that it is something that we can water and get better at, that we can practice more and more open-heartedness and bring that to our experiences, our interactions, our attitudes. So there's something called the four immeasurable attitudes, and they are equanimity, loving kindness, compassion, and empathetic joy. And those are attitudes that we can cultivate so that I can bring them as more of a habit. I can not, they, each one of those are actually an antidote to some of the mental states that we more easily tend to fall into: anger and jealousy, frustration, ill will, those things that don't support us in being our best and being as well as we'd like to be. So I think one of the keys is understanding that this is a practice that we can do daily, and that these are not, perhaps something that is this soft skill that we can't talk about. But it's actually human qualities that help us to be our best, whether we're a leader, whether we are a family member, a parent, just a community member, that these are qualities that help us to be our best.
I'm glad you brought up family members, because I know for so many of us, that's where we have a lot of opportunity to grapple with this stuff, right? And the reparations that you've made and the transformation that you've experienced with your own mom have always been so inspiring to me, because I have, you know, as I'm sure many of us, have like work I feel like I want to be able to do with my own mom. And I wonder how that sort of open-heartedness served you in that journey with your mom.
Mm, yeah. So I think one of the things that we often find that when we're having any challenge in any relationship, we're often very focused on how it impacts me, what I need, what I want. Open-heartedness helps us to expand beyond just me and mine. So loving kindness, the wish for not only myself but others' well-being, helps to start to expand who I'm bringing my good wishes for. And so with my own mother, for example, to begin to think about that I really do wish her well, that I want her to be well, and when I would see her upset, that I could come back to that attitude, which led me to actions and speech that I actually was more in alignment with in terms of my values than if I didn't bring that thought to mind. And then compassion, the wish to remove suffering, the recognition of first with empathy, and then the wish to remove suffering, true compassion. When we see anyone suffering, especially our loved ones that we have some direct influence with, bringing that attitude to bear into my actions and speech, that can really make such a difference. And it's not with this idea of attachment that they will change, because that's where I can really get stuck. If I'm this way, then this is what the outcome will be. But really what it does is help us practice being the person we want to be, And yes, it does help in general, but there's no guarantees. You know, there's no guarantees that another person will change.
Yeah.
So we go into it knowing that this is a healthier attitude for me, and it helps me to actually add to my own well-being, my own sense of eudaimonia or genuine happiness, lasting happiness, by showing up in alignment with my values rather than doing things that I don't feel good about, because those stick with us too.
Mm.
And I think in those kinds of very close familial relationships, we can often find ourselves, for so many reasons, acting in ways we don't feel good about. And so these are attitudes that we can practice and water daily that can help me in the moment have that split second to make the choice towards doing something I actually will feel good about in the long run, even if it's hard.
I know we've talked about, kind of the self-protection that we take on that can often happen in the wounding that we might experience in any kind of relationship. And we talked about, you know, sort of when you're able to, restore some wholeness in a relationship that something beautiful happens with that past response to self-protect. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, certainly that that sense of needing to be protecting of ourselves can become very habitual.
Yeah.
And we can get very stuck in that. Even if the situation changes, we're still in that pattern.
Right.
So I think one of the opportunities that I've experienced is that as I have more access to the wisdom inside me through a mindfulness practice, through cultivating attention and values, and then I actually have more discernment. So I know more and more. I'm being very clear about what's healthy and what's not healthy. So now I can start to discern, oh, this actually isn't a time where I need to keep holding that guard. I don't need to do that anymore. And so we then have the opportunity to look at, well, what's healthier for me in this moment? And now I can begin to soften. I can begin to open. I can recognize that past hurts are not current.
Mm-hmm.
That I can have that awareness and act from what's true right now.
And it, you know, what we talked about is that lovely experience of freedom, you know, no longer being at the whim of those habitual patterns, but the ability to, you know, really have that much more wholehearted kind of experience because we can choose.
And I think that goes right back to cultivating attentional balance, because when I have that, and largely that comes through a concentration meditation practice, when I have that space, I have choice. And in that moment, I have that freedom to have really that free will to choose one thought over another. I spoke with someone the other day who was dealing with a lot of worry, a lot of concern and worry and lots of rumination around it, dragging them away from the work they needed to do and struggling with that. And I think this is where cultivating our attentional balance and that muscle of attention, A, it helps us to recognize, what is my attention doing? Oh, it's caught up in worry. It's caught up in rumination. And not only recognizing that, but having the strength, the muscle to pull my attention away from that worry and place it where it might be healthier, more beneficial for me.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's fear or worry or all these things that we often get caught into habitual patterns with, I think, and this goes back, I think, to inner sustainability as well as working in sustainability. If we are habitually caught up in worry, we are wearing ourselves out. It's exhausting. And we don't have the freedom to choose what might be a healthier thought pattern or healthier direction to be to be working in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what, give us an example of a practice that you have now in your life. You know, like what does it really look like?
Yeah. Well, so waking up in the morning is when it starts right away. Although I have to say it really does start the night before in setting the intention to have my practice in the morning. That's important. You know, making sure that I'm setting my alarm early enough, that I'm really giving myself that time. So upon waking, I really try to bring to mind the thought, here's a day that'll never come again. Wow, how fortunate that I woke up today. How fortunate. And I'll tell you, that's really different than maybe 10 years ago when I would wake up and think, oh, okay,
didn't get enough sleep.
Here's the day of the day. I got all this stuff to do. You know, so it's a habit that we can all cultivate. It's super simple. You wake up and bring this to mind as soon as you can. And it's a real shift. So that's a beginning.
Which is really gratitude practice.
Gratitude. Yeah. Bringing and really, I think also recognizing that this is a day that will never come again.
Yeah.
So that I can ask the question, how do I want to show up today?
Mm.
Because when I ask that question today and tomorrow and the next day, pretty soon I'm weaving together day after day of meaning and purpose in my life. And it's not that I have to make this grand long-term plan. I just do it day by day. I like to say it's like little bits that add up to a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with that and then moving into meditation. So my most sort of foundational meditation is a shamatha practice, which is really what I've been talking about, cultivating attentional balance. So
just kind of watching the thoughts that you're having.
Well, actually not watching the thoughts. In fact, it's first relaxing the body and then coupling that with bringing stability to my attention with practice, which means trying not to pay attention to the thoughts, letting the thoughts go as if they're sort of a waterfall. Let them go. They're going to keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
And bring my mind back again and again to the sensations of my breath.
Mm.
So
okay.
Every time I bring it back, it's like lifting the barbell. It's strengthening the muscle. And then in my day, when I recognize I'm worrying,
mm-hmm.
and then I have the muscle to bring it back away from that. So that's exactly what we're doing in a very practical sense. It's not mystical. It's really creating neural pathways that serve me.
So powerful.
Yeah.
You know, I really want to get a chance to ask you, because I think this is, you know, in a lot of people's back pockets, you know, with what we know about now, what the science is telling us, you know, that near-term human extinction, you know, is a very real possibility. And we have no idea of the timelines of any of it because of all the, you know, self-reinforcing feedback loops and you name it. So when people feel sort of futile about their contribution and get to that point of why bother? Why cultivate these practices so I can be more present with my gifts? Why bother?
Mm. So I think, you know, there's probably lots and lots of answers to that question. And I think for me, it comes down to being the person that I want to be, whether my life ends tomorrow or many years from now. And so if, you know, I think it comes down to this idea that while I'm here, I want to be as much benefit as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that I need to be well on the inside, to be well on the outside. And I think we don't know truly what's going to happen. I mean, we can bring it back to a very practical level. We don't know who's going to call us today. We don't know how our life might change for the better or for the worse. You know, we don't know these things. And again, it's not to throw the science to the side. It's really saying we want to hold possibility in its fullness.
Mm.
We want to hold hope with its fullness. The Dalai Lama says, be optimistic. It feels better. And he doesn't say that to be Pollyanna, to put on rose-colored glasses. He does it, I think, to say, it feels better. Let's be better. Let's be whole and well so that we can be our best and address these things as best as we can. Mm. Not to be sunk with pessimism, sunk right. with the negative side of this wide realm of possibility.
Yep. And why wouldn't we want to create the greatest possibility?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Joanna Macy speaks of active hope, which is really not pinning our hopes on one outcome that may or may not happen, but having a vision and then bringing intention to do the most we can towards that vision.
Mm, that's a beautiful place to end. Thank you so much. Thank you, all of you, for listening today. If you have a question for Laura or me, you can join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. And until next time, keep creating all those best conditions for the greatest possibility. See you next time.